The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Reform This with Dr. Zudi Jasser.
This is Dr. Zudi Jasser. Welcome back to Reform This. We're talking about technology, websummit.com that I attended in Portugal. Made some good contacts, made some good networking. I think it's going to be a long process. I thought, you know, I went in thinking, oh my gosh, it's just fantastic to be invited to this. I'm going to be able to build relationships with instantly folks that want to virally make the message of reform spread, that instantly understand the need for our message of the Muslim reform movement to get out, the need to marginalize the tyrants and the dictators in the Middle East. And unfortunately, I was met with a few understood it, some who didn't care, others who just couldn't understand what I was talking about because to them, religious issues, political issues are just irrelevant. And yet when I tried to monetize it and tell them that, well, remember, these movements all are going to use technology in order to viralize and change societies, and those markets are all going to be open. I mean, look at WhatsApp and all the other technologies that are part and parcel of these changes. There's a lot of money to be made there, so that the economics didn't work of it. So ultimately, it was beyond challenging to get them to engage often on the issue. And when they did, some of them were certainly very savvy about it. The keynote speakers on the stage from one after the other talked about in lofty ways the impact that new technologies, artificial intelligence, will have in the future. I read a few days after returning a piece in the Wall Street Journal about the hype of virtual medicine. And it reminded me that at the end of the day, while technology can speed up certain changes, and as it has done in my practice of medicine, the hype of virtual medicine has shown us that things might normalize, might prevent errors, might help improve data collection, but it hasn't changed quality. The hype of virtual medicine has not changed quality. So how did I go from counterterrorism and Muslim reform into medicine? Well, the technologies that can change religion will not do it without human relationships changing, without the touch of human emotions, of sensitivities, without true tribalism ended with major wars in the 15th, 16th century and on, because human nature struggled to maintain its current power structures, that at the end of the day, as we see now with the influence of bots, Russian cyber threats and Chinese threats and other aspects, autocrats will continue to use the same technology that human beings that are individualistic use, and they will often then become more powerful because of those technologies. That ultimately real reform and modernization is going to take the long slog, if you will, of communication with our fellow human beings, with changes in localities. And most of the studies on radicalization have proven that the internet is simply one of the final steps in operationalizing militants, but most of the radicalization starts locally at the local delis and neighborhoods and mosques. That imams that may not be saying, oh, go join ISIS, all of them, most of them do not say go join ISIS or go strap this belt. But they're talking about Jews in a very inhuman way. They're talking about Americans in a fascistic way. They're talking about ISIS in a supremacist way, Islamist in a dominant way. So all of these things are radicalizing ideas that need to be confronted on human-to-human basis. And once we get that human-to-human basis right, we can viralize that into a technology. But you can't first create technology and obstacles and think that somehow that's going to solve the problem. And this week I got some pushback on a position I took, which was that You know, the Countering Extremism Project, New York Times wrote a piece about how they finally got a success because YouTube was removing every video of Imam Anwar Awlaki. And, well, yeah, Awlaki is a fascist enemy of the state who, I believe, appropriately was targeted and killed by our drone in 2010 in Yemen. He had been on video declaring war on the United States. He had has radicalized scores of Muslims, and his videos continue to radicalize. Now, there's no doubt that had he had a YouTube channel, it should be removed. Had he had any video that shows a predilection for Muslims that recommends that they join Islamist militant groups or commit acts of terror, that should be removed. But he had videos on the life of the Prophet Muhammad, many of the precursor to the violent Islamism, the nonviolent Islamist ideology that's anti-Semitic and other things, but should it be removed? Mein Kampf, I'll remind you, is still sold. Which bookstores profit from that, I don't know. But there is some educational value when we want to teach our youth to become pro-liberty, pro-freedom, pro-American. How do I educate them about what is Islamism? What should they not be? You can't tell them, well, don't be what this. I can't tell you what Awlaki is because his videos are gone. I can't show you his books because I'd want to buy one, but, you know, I can't download it anymore. I don't know where to find it. Now, you may say, well, there's still access to it. We'll just take it off YouTube. Well, I'll remind you that Prager University now is suing YouTube appropriately, I believe, because its videos were taken down because the YouTube people felt that they were controversial and beyond their criteria. That criteria is what? About constitutional rights, liberty, freedom, free speech. What you look at Dennis Prager's write-up on that and what their lawsuit's about. Is YouTube simply a private company, or does it now become, because of its size, a vehicle for the common place discussion and a controller of free speech? That is one of the biggest debates of the time, but I will tell you that at Web Summit, I wanted to have those kind of conversations. And there's very little of it. Why is it? I guess the question I want to leave you with is, why is it that most of the conversation about web technology, about social media, is so dominated by liberals? And I don't mind liberalism. I work with our Muslim reform movement is bipartisan, is a joining of conservatives, liberals, feminists, gay rights activists, and others who believe that the biggest problem of today's century in radicalization is political Islam, and the solution must come from all forms of Muslims with a diverse set of opinions, not a monolithic form, but a multifaceted approach from left and right. But this Web Summit seemed to be a lot of liberals from the American political and European political standpoint who didn't want to address, they don't mind addressing disruption in Christian thought and other things, but when it comes to Islam, oh no, they're a minority, we can't defend them. This is a problem. The identity politic when it comes to Muslims is a problem that is a huge, if not the number one obstacle to us being engaged in modernizing and reform. Now listen, I'm not advocating that Awlaki's videos not be severely limited. But if I, for example, if you have a video of Awlaki reading Dr. Seuss, should that be removed? Does that radicalize Muslims? It might. I don't know. But there's a slippery slope there. What about all? How did Awlaki himself get radicalized? I believe he got radicalized learning from the Muslim Brotherhood, learning from Hassan al-Banna, Sayyid Qutb, Yusuf Qardawi, Tariq Ramadan, all these Islamists, be them violent or nonviolent, radicalize them. Do you understand that if you take the words of Sheikh Awlaki, You will find very, very similar sentence structure and content coming from Imam Qardawi, whose videos are all over YouTube. So once you start removing nonviolent videos, no matter how supremacist they might be, you then start down the slippery slope. Now, they would say, well, what about the advertisers who don't want to pay YouTube to have their ads stuck next to a fascist like Olaki's face? That is a great point. I wouldn't want to either if I'm advertising for an American Islamic Forum for Democracy or my own medical business, whatever it might be. I wouldn't want that next to that. There must be ways for algorithms to do that, just like I can pick which program on Fox News or CNN or CBS that my advertisements appear next to. There should be a mechanism technologically to decide which programs your advertisements will appear next to and which ones they will not appear next to. That's what the debate is, but not having it removed from the public domain. I think once we start doing that, corporations enter into a mechanism of marginalizing the ability of us to learn from the content available on the internet through Google or elsewhere. Google is a private company. Their Google search is supposedly able to give me access to every piece of information across the planet. If they start blocking things under the name of national security, how can I learn from what's evil? So that I don't become that, so that my children do not become that. We need to have access to these things. Yes, Europe has hate speech laws, etc. I don't think that ultimately nonviolent hate speech should be restricted. I think it should be marginalized. I think it should be made radioactive. But access to it, I think, should be maintained. Corporations should be protected from being tarnished with that, absolutely. But major conduits of that global transmission of information will be abused by the tyrants of the world in order to say that they're preventing militancy, when in fact the King of Saudi Arabia will prevent my allies from getting speech spread by saying that that is Islamophobic, that that is anti-Islam. And yes, as militant as the facial figures are of people like Olaki are, if they have nonviolent speech, I believe it should still, its access should be allowed. We need to figure out how to defeat that speech rather than simply saying we deleted it and it's gone. It will not be gone. They will continue to use it.
You're listening to Reform This with Dr. Zudi Jasser. The Blaze Radio Network.